Okay, yeah. So we're doing Sefer Shmuel Aleph, first chapter. We just started. And I may as well just read the first couple of psukim again. We're going to start talking more about the third pasuk today. So it begins, Vayhi ish echad min ha-Ramasayim, Sofim in ha-Ephraim. And there was a man, he was from Ramasayim Sofim, we'll just say was a town that was part of these two towns that were near each other, that looked out at each other, with a valley in between. Nehar Ephraim, from Mount Ephraim. Ushmo Elkanah, and his name was Elkanah, ben Yerocham, ben Elihu, ben Tochu, ben Tuch, Ephrasi. His name was Elkanah, the son of Yerocham, the son of Elihu, the son of Tochu, the son of Tuch, Ephrasi, which we'll say for now, that means his family was from Har Ephraim. The low, Shtei Nashim, and he had two wives. Shem Achas Chana, the name of the first one was Chana. The Shem Hashenis Penina, and the name of his second wife was Penina. Vayehi Lefnina Yeladim, and Penina had children. She actually had 10. Urechana Ein Yeladim, and Chana had no children. The Allah Ha'ish Hahu Meiro Miyamim Yamima, and that man would go up from his city each year, or each moed. Some mafarshim say it means once a year. Some say it means all of the shalosh regalim, all of the three holidays, mishtachavos, to bow, v'lisboach, and to bring offerings to Hashem, to vakos, to Hashem, in Shiloh, which is where the mishkan, the tabernacle was. V'sham shnei v'nei Eli, chafni u'pinchas kohanim l'Hashem. And there were the two sons of Eli, chafni and Pinchas, who were the kohanim, they were the priests to Hashem. So, then goes on to talk about what happened with Elkanah and Chana. And it seems that this line about, you know, and there, Chafni and Pinchas were the kohanim, seems a little bit out of place, irrelevant for over here. So, why does the pasuk mention that Chafni and Pinchas were the kohanim there? So we're going to see later that Chafni and Pinchas, the sons of Eli, were not the most righteous of the Kohanim that you're going to meet in your travels through Tanakh. We're going to see they were found guilty, found at fault for a number of things, which we'll have to see exactly what they were when we get there, but they weren't necessarily the best guys. And so that's the first thing, you know, to keep in mind, and that may have to do with why they're being mentioned here. So we spoke last week that Elkanah, he would go up each year, and he was really, like, you know, I guess we say Avraham Avinu was the first kiruv worker, the first outreach, but Elkanah was also an excellent outreach person, and he would go every year, and at that time, the people were, for whatever reason, were not being Olam L'Regel. They weren't fulfilling the mitzvah of traveling up to the Mishkan for the Shalosh Regalim. And Elkanah, on his way, the Medrash tells us, would invite people to come along with him. He would meet people, and he would say, oh, why don't you come? And the first year, he got a few people to come, and the next year, he got a few more, and the Medrash says until eventually, all of Israel was fulfilling the mitzvah of going up to the Mishkan for the Shalosh Regalim. And Elkanah accomplished this, you know, single-handedly. And so therefore, the Malbim learns that the reason that the Pasuk is mentioning the Bnei Eli, Chafni and Pinchas over here, these two Kohanim, was to explain why people were not going. People weren't going because these two Kohanim were the Kohanim, and they were doing, you know, they were different things that they were doing, but they were making people wait, and they were pressuring people, and they were not necessarily bringing the karbanos correctly. So that says the Malbim. That's why the pasuk is telling you this. It's telling you why the people were were not going up to the Mishkan, and Elkanah was successful in convincing people to go up once again. There are a number of other creative approaches to what the pasuk is trying to tell you. I wanted to share one in particular. But before I do that, let's read one more pasuk. The next pasuk Dalet says, "Vayhi hayom," and it was on that day. "Vayizbach Elkanah," and Elkanah brought his karban. "V'nasan l'Penina ishto," and he gave a portion to Penina, his wife. "U'chol baneha u'v'noseh amanos," and to all of her sons and daughters he also gave portions. And pasuk hey, verse 5 says, "U'lechana yiteng mana achas apayim," and Chana also he gave one mana apayim, which we'll talk about shortly what that means. But going back to the beginning of pasuk Dalet, "Vayhi hayom," and it was on that day. So what day is it talking about? So the Mefarshim have different approaches. Some just say it means every day. You know, each day when he was at the Mishkan, this is what he would do. He'd bring his karban, his shlamim, and share the meat with his family. And this is how it would happen each time.
I missed the part about, were they Kohanim themselves?
They were Levim.
Shaul was a Levi, right?
Shaul was from Binyamin.
He was a Binyamin.
So, but the other Mefarshim speak out, the Medrash says, "Vayhi hayom," means that it was Atzeret, it was Shavuot. Some Rashi from the Targum here just says, it was a Moed, it was a holiday, as he would come, you know, each holiday, "Vayhi hayom," and it was on one of these holidays that the story unfolds. The Medrash says that it was Shavuot. However, there's another Chazal, there's another Gemara, that says, what's about to unfold, by the way, is Chana, who we said has no children, she's going to daven for children, and she's going to be answered. And she's going to have a child, it's going to be Shmuel, she's going to have a number of children. And the Gemara says that on Rosh Hashanah, Nishida, Sarah, Rachel, I think, the Chana, that on Rosh Hashanah, Sarah, Imenu, and Rachel, the mothers, and Chana were all remembered on Rosh Hashanah that their tzilos were answered. So, now this could mean that's when they conceived their children. They were all barren, and then they all had children. But it sounds like that's when their tefillah was received. And so it seems, according to that Chazal, that this was all unfolding on Rosh Hashanah. So,
when do we read this as a
Haftorah? On Rosh Hashanah.
That's the proof. That's the riot.
Okay, now you got it.
So, exactly, that's why. So we read, right, the first chapter of Shmuel as the Haftorah on Rosh Hashanah, because that's the day that the Gemara says that Chana Tzilah was answered. Yes. Good question. We will eventually talk about that name of Hashem. Not this week, but Chazal, Chana's going to use that name also. In her tefillah, I think. And
isn't she the one who was davening, speaking?
Yes.
That's where we get our...
You know, you may have moved already by the time we get there, but that's in this chapter.
That's where we got our Masorah. Isn't that where we get our Masorah from? We get our Masorah for davening through her actions.
Yes.
Right.
So you could come back next week, and we might do it. But otherwise, you may have to fly in from Cleveland.
No, I'm not going to do that, no. You know what? Videotape it.
We're going to take out the Masechus Brachos.
Videotape it or put it on a place where I can get you recordings?
Yes. They go up eventually.
Yeah.
FaceTime.
FaceTime.
So that there's the Tzitz Eliezer, Eliezer Yehuda Waldenberg. That's his name. So he has a discussion about this, about whether what day was Chanukah Seal, and he does conclude that it was on Rosh Hashanah. The Pnei Yoshua seems to imply this, as well as the Chasam Sofer writes this, and they based it on this Gemara that on Rosh Hashanah Chana was remembered. There's a Rashi also in Yevamos. Rashi says the Gemara says that Keneged Shalosh Pekidos the Amar Mar Rosh Hashanah Nifkidu Sara Rachel Vechana. I'm not actually sure what it's referring to, but Rashi there says that the three Pekidos, the three remembrances that Kadosh Baruch Hu remembered the three barren women to hear their tefillos on Rosh Hashanah. So Rashi and Yevamos says explicitly that he heard the tefillos of these three, Sara, Rachel, and Chana, on Rosh Hashanah.
But at this point in the text, you're not talking about it.
Well, that depends. In Pasuk Dalet, in verse 4, we say, Vayihi Hayom, and it was on that day. So what day is that referring to? Is it just a general end of, you know, each time on that day this would happen? Or is it saying a specific day? Either way, what's about to unfold is would happen on a specific day. And according to this Chazal and these Rishonim, it seems like it was on Rosh Hashanah. In fact, in the Rosh Hashanah davening, there are 9 brachos, right? Because there's the regular 6, and then in Mustafa at least, and then you have an extra 3 for Malchios, Zichronos, and Shofros. And the Gemara says that those 9 correspond to Chana's Tfilah, where she mentions Hashem's name 9 times. So that's another connection. So it seems that this happened on Rosh Hashanah. And we're going to come back to this idea at another point, but based on this, the Chasam Sofer has a very creative shat explanation for why the Pasuk mentions Chofni and Pinchas over here. So we're talking about Elkanah going up for the Shalosh Regalim, but now we're saying that it wasn't actually one of the Shalosh Regalim, it wasn't Pesach, Shavuot, or Sukkot, it was actually Rosh Hashanah, right? That's what seems from these Chazal. So the Chasam Sofer starts by asking a number of questions. He says, Miyamim Yamima implies that it was once a year. He says, but it was Rosh Hashanah. So are you telling me that he didn't go up for the other Shalosh Regalim? He only went once a year on Rosh Hashanah? Secondly, why does it say that he went with Hishtachavot? It says he went up to bow at in the Beis HaMikdash. He says that's obvious. That's why everyone went up for the Shalosh Regalim, was to bow and to serve and to do the Shalosh Regalim service. Thirdly, he says, as we've been asking, why are the sons of Pinchas of Eli mentioned here? What does this have to do with the rest of the Pasuk? So he says as follows. The Gemara in Yevamos brings a dispute between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. The Gemara says that for 2.5 years, Nechlaku Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. For 2.5 years, Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel had a dispute. Beis Shammai held that Noach Adam Shalo Nidra, Yoser Misha Nidra. Man would have been better off not having been created than having been created.
Ooh.
And Beis Hillel says, no, man is better off having been created. I don't want to get No, I didn't look into all the different shots in the mist, so we're just going to stick to the Chacham Sofer for today.
And this is based on what? Why would Beis Shammai have said that?
So maybe we'll answer that.
They would be gone.
They would have never existed.
That's right.
So that would, maybe they'd be better off that way. I mean, just simply understood, it's because, you know, it's not easy to you know, do more mitzvahs and averos and to come out, you know, as a, you know, to you start with a pure neshama. Am I going to return my neshama as pure as it was to Hashem? You know, it's not easy. So, anyways, there's a lot to talk about in that Gemara, but let's just talk about what the Chacham Sofer says. So the Gemara actually says, in the end, Beis Hillel actually agreed to Beis Shammai that it would have been better off not to have been created. Better off not to have been created. In the end, everybody agreed.
Really?
So, says the Chacham Sofer, he suggests, they're actually having the same dispute. This dispute is intertwined with another dispute in the Gemara Rosh Hashanah, where you have a machlokas between Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. Rabbi Eliezer says that the world was created in the month of Tishrei. And Rabbi Yoshua says that the world was created in the month of Nisan. The Tishrei Nivra Ha'olam or the Nisan Nivra Ha'olam. So, what does one have to do with the other? What are these two disputes? Whether it was worth it for man to be created, or when the world was created? What do they have to do with each other? So he says, really, both Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer agree that the world was physically formed in Tishrei. The world came into being in Tishrei. But the question is, what was the purpose of creation? Was the purpose of creation fulfilled at the moment of creation? Or was it only fulfilled in Nisan when, as he calls it, the time of that Yetzias Mitzrayim was going to take place, the time that the Jewish nation would become a nation? He says that would be the time Shehitzchil Oran Shal Yisrael is noted, that, you know, the world was created in Tishrei, and then, but only in the time of Nisan did the spiritual energy of the birth of the Jewish nation come into being, which would be the purpose of the world. That only happened in the time of Nisan. That was the second opinion.
I have a question about that.
Okay. Okay.
So, before the Jewish nation became the nation in Nisan, okay, you have all man before. Adam, Chava, their children, Noah.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of that. There had to be some sort of spiritual, you know.
But Chazal called that time period the 2,000 years of Tohu, the 2,000 years of emptiness. So, you know, that
emptiness?
Until the birth of the Jewish nation, it wasn't there wasn't a Torah, there wasn't
the Torah was here at the time of creation of the world.
But there wasn't a mitzvah de Osa. There wasn't a Torah that had been commanded yet. So there was a change that went on at the time of, which is not the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but it's close, and you know, it's all around the same.
When Avraham Avinu, he had his first encounters with Hashem.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that at that point also,
we're not dismissing and saying that there wasn't any point of that, but it wasn't the purpose, right? Those are two different things.
Okay.
So he says that that right, that according to Rabbi Yoshua, who says that that the Nisan Nivra Olam, he was saying that at that the time of Nisan is when the spiritual energy for the purpose of the world, for the Jewish nation, came into being. Now Rabbi Eliezer was a student of Beis Shammai. He was a Shamasi. He was a student of the Academy of Shammai. So he says, therefore, if they were of the same academy and of the same opinion, so if you take the world that was created in Tishrei, where there's no Torah and no mitzvot, and like we said, it's the 2,000 years of Tohu. That if you're looking at the world creation at the time of Tishrei, so then you would say Noach Shalo Nivra, it's better off not having been created. Because there's no, you know, at the moment of creation of Tishrei, there was no Torah, there was no Kali Yisrael, there was no, the potential hadn't been put into the world yet. And so he looked at the world as Noach Shalo Nivra, it was better off not having been created. But Beis Hillel was looking at the world once the spiritual energy for a Jewish nation had been formed at the time of Nisan. And at that point he was saying, Noach Shanivra, it is better off being created because this is there's a nation here that will fulfill the Torah, the mitzvahs of the Torah, and carry out the purpose of creation.
So it took God 2,000 years to find a suitable people.
I don't know about that, but it took 2,000 years to plant the seeds that would be needed to bring, for that nation to be what it needed to be. So the Chassam Sofer goes on and says that this was all. This Noach Shanivra, this that we were fulfilling the purpose of creation, only existed for a short period of time. This is where he gets very creative. And he says, from the moment that Moshe Rabbeinu met HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem appeared to Moshe Rabbeinu at the burning bush. So that was Rosh Chodesh Nisan. From then until the decree on the Meraglim, this coming week's Parsha, of the spies, where they're supposed to go into Israel, but then Hashem says, no, you've sinned, you're going to be 40 years in the desert. That was sort of the end of the opportunity to truly be the nation that we were meant to be. Once we were sent into the 40 years in the desert, then it was all downhill from there. So that time period from the burning bush until the spies was 2.5 years. 2.5 years had passed. So he says that it was those 2.5 years when the Jewish nation was at its spiritual height, was what it was meant to be. On that is what Beis Hillel said, Noah Shanivra, it would be proper, it was worth it to be created. And he explains, even though if you read the Gemara, you assume that when it says that they argued for 2.5 years, it means that the argument went on for 2.5 years. The Chassam Sofer learns, no, they were arguing over 2.5 years. That they were arguing over the 2.5 year period from the time of the burning bush until the time of the Meraglim, and Beis Hillel was saying, no, look right here, this is Noach Shanivra. This is that it was worth it to be for the world to be created because of this nation that reached its spiritual potential at that time. However, after that, when we sinned with the spies, then we returned to being, Noach Shalo Nivra. Then we were no longer fulfilling our purpose in the world. And then Beis Hillel went back to agreeing, as the Gemara concludes, that in the end, Nimnu v'gamru, Beis Hillel agreed to Beis Shammai that Noach Shalo Nivra, that it was best not to have been created. Okay. Now, coming back to our story. So, he says, ever wonder why we don't have a mitzvah to be Olo L'Regel on Rosh Hashanah? Says the Chassam Sofer. Why? We have Sukkot, we have Shavuot, we have Pesach, we have a mitzvah to go to the Mikdash. Right? Why not on Rosh Hashanah also? Why isn't there a mitzvah to go on Rosh Hashanah? So he says the reason is because it's not the same level of celebration. It's not such a celebration. It's the day of creation, but is Yom Kippur. But is the day of creation such a celebration? No. Noach Shalo Nivra. We're better off not having been created, he said. That's the conclusion. So the day of creation is not something to celebrate.
We you give him a gun and let him blow his brains out.
No, that's, no, but Achshav, I forgot to tell you the end of the Gemara. The end of the Gemara is Achshav Shenivra, but once you've been created, you have to examine your ways and you have to try to perfect yourself. But that would not help your neshama.
I'm the logic of what these guys are talking about.
You're having difficulty understanding.
Well, it's like suicidal.
No, it's not suicidal.
If you're saying that the world should never have been created, that means you're so unhappy with everything. You shouldn't be here now.
No. That's not what anyone's saying. Nobody's unhappy with. Nobody's saying that we should end our lives, you know?
If you read it, it's
a very philosophical question.
I know,
right?
And
it's also a forbidden to take care of one's life.
Right.
So that in and of itself is...
But that would defeat the purpose. The point is...
I hear what you're saying. I just disagree with the thinking process behind it, but okay.
Okay, fine. So, let's accept that Rosh Hashanah, though, in general, is a day that you could say, no, Shalonibro, we would have been better off not having been created. So it's not such a celebration. But still, there were people who would still go up for Rosh Hashanah to the Beis HaMikdash. And there were two reasons for this. So some people went up because the Beis HaMikdash, the Sifri describes, was a place where you would go and you would witness the Kohanim and you would see, you know, people serving Hashem, and it was a tremendous experience of spiritual growth to be able to go up for the Shalosh Regalim and just witness what was going on and participate and be a part of that. And that was why some people would go up even for Rosh Hashanah, even though it wasn't such a celebration, but they would still go up. And it was less chatted. Somebody actually talked about that here.
when were the two houses of Shammai and Hillel in existence? Was it during the Roman occupation or after that?
During.
During. Okay. So that answers a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Secondly, the other reason why people would go up was because there were great tzaddikim who were absolutely fulfilling the purpose of creation. And about those people, it was a celebration. Somebody who could perfect the neshama, somebody who could succeed in this world, which we all strive to do, it's absolutely Noach Shenivra. So even though in general it's Noach Shenivra, it's better not to have been created, for most people, but a person could reach a spiritual height, spiritual level, and be a great tzaddik, and on that person it's Noach Shenivra, it is best, it is good to have been created. And for that person, it is a celebration, Rosh Hashanah. And it is a reason to be Olo L'Regel, to go up to Yerushalayim to give thanks to Hashem. So says the Chasam Sofer, that was Elkanah. Elkanah was a tremendous tzaddik. And for Elkanah, Rosh Hashanah there was a reason to be Olo L'Regel, to celebrate his creation, to celebrate the Noach Shenivra, that it was worth it to be created, to become a person who could perfect their neshama, a person who could succeed in this world. So that's what the Pasuk is describing here. Pasuk is saying, he would go up, miyamim yamimah, he would go up, in addition to the three times a year that he would go up for the Shalosh Regalim, he would go up once a year also on Rosh Hashanah, in addition to that, because he was on that level of Noach Shenivra, that it was worth it to be created. And so he would go up on Rosh Hashanah l'shtachavos, l'shbalach l'Hashem, to bow and to give thanks to Hashem for having been created. V'sham shnei b'nei eli chafni yom pinchas. And lest you think that he was going up for the other reason, which was to learn from the Kohanim, because to be Olo L'Regel was also a great learning experience. Lest you think that was the reason that he was going up, says the Pasuk, no, the Kohanim in those days at that time were Chafni and Pinchas. They weren't anyone that you could learn from. And therefore, don't think that's the reason why Elkanah was going. He wasn't going up for the other reason, which was to learn from the Kohanim. The Kohanim weren't very good guys. Rather, he was going up because of this celebration of Rosh Hashanah, of Noach Shenivra, that it was worth it. It was good to have been created.
So there was a lot of turmoil going on even then at that point.
What, with Chafni and Pinchas?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I guess this is a shlamim, which is a cart, which is a sacrifice where you would also, right, you would eat from the meat. okay, or a coda, it could have been. What's that?
The commentary is the shlamim.
Shlamim. No, I don't think right. Yeah, so it's, that's fun. Okay. Okay, Pasakei. Ulechana eating mana achas apayim. And to Chana he would give one mana apayim. What does apayim mean? So, some Rashi learns it has to do with the word like faith. That it was a nice piece that he would give to Chana that could be received. The sefer panim yafos, with a smile, he will give Chana a nice portion. Some say it means that it was like a big piece full of meat from both sides. They had like two faces. It was like apayim, two faces, because it had meat on both sides. So he gave a really nice portion. Others say that it means apayim with anger. And why was that? So because he loves Chana, Hashem saw Garachma, and Hashem had closed up her womb. So that's either a reason, that seems to be a reason why he would give her a nice piece, because he loved her, and he wanted to show dearness, he was sad for her, Hashem had, she was barren.
Very similar to Leah and Rachel. The two sisters.
Yeah.
That Leah was having one after another after another. Rachel had nothing.
Yeah.
Until some time later.
Well, you said apayim, so who is he angry at?
So, okay, so good question. If we go with that interpretation, that it means that he was angry, so... who was he angry at? So I'll tell you how the Radak says it. Ka'as klomar b'kas ha'yanosin la'mana achas levad. He was angry, so he would only give her one portion. Because Hashem had closed her womb, and she didn't have children to give other manos to. Meaning to Penina, he would give many, because he would give to her and to all of her children. But to Chana, he just gave one. Who was he angry at? I guess Hashem, if you're going to go with this. That's what it would seem.
He really wanted her to have children, but because she wasn't able to conceive, he was angry at Hashem that she was, and she was really the loved one versus the other one.
Yeah, there is another, I think it's also a Sam Sofer, who I think might be, I think it was a Sam Sofer, has also a very creative shot in this, that he gave it to her to try to make her angry. He gave it to her with anger, meaning he treated her angrily, because since she didn't have children, so she hadn't suffered through pregnancy and childbirth, which is a kapara on the faith of Chava, on the sin of Chava, it's an atonement, and she hadn't experienced that, so he had to, in order for her to have a kapara, to have an atonement for the sin of Chava, he had to manufacture, something to atone for that, to make her suffer. It's a very interesting idea. Don't try this at home. He builds it. It's much part of a much bigger piece, but he does have that idea.
So apparently, Chana did not have a hard time giving birth, whereas the other one did.
Well, she didn't have a hard time giving birth because she didn't give birth yet.
Right, but when she did give birth, her pregnancies were relatively easy, is what you're saying.
No, I didn't, I'm not
That's
sure.
That's what he's, is that what
No, he's just saying that at this point she hadn't had experienced the pain yet.
Right.
And so to give her a kapara, he tried to make her suffer in other ways.
Okay.
But you have to understand that in context. Yes.
Yes. It's the one interpretation you didn't mention, I think.
I did not mention it. I'm trying to see if anyone here says that. Yeah, I didn't see anybody say that it means double portion. Two faiths, yeah. That's also like a very specific, that's like Rabbein or Yeshaya.
Yeah,
that's
but
not
goes
the,
on the word faith.
Yeah,
not,
right.
Yeah,
so I'm not sure about that. I can't comment.
I always thought of it as sort of like pamayim.
Well, it means like two faiths. It's a hard word. That's why there's so many different approaches to what it means. It's not clear what it means. Okay. Pasuk Vav. V'chiasata tarasa gam ka'at. And her tzara, her sister wife, her co-wife, Penina, would anger her and anger her. Bavur hari'ima. In order to embarrass her, to anger her, Yisagar Hashem be'ad rachma, because Hashem had closed up her womb. So here we have Penina making Chana angry, and it says Bavur hari'ima. Actually, I'm not even sure what happened. Like that.
She made life miserable for Chana.
Irritate her?
She made life miserable for Chana.
Yes.
Which is kind
and
of
it
what
says,
Leah did with Rachel.
Maybe. It says, Tisagar Hashem be'ad rachma. It says, because Hashem had closed up her womb. So the pasuk seems to be giving a reason why she would do that. So, you know, simply reading the pasuk, it's just, you know, that would seem to be saying that was how she sees her, you know, that she would, she would tease her, that she didn't have, she would anger her, that make Chana angry that she had not been able to have any children. The Medrash goes into detail about the kinds of things she would say. The Medrash says that, as some examples, it says she would say, did you buy your children, a sudar, a handkerchief, or a shirt? Did you buy them clothing? Like, it's really biting. She would say, you're not, in the morning, she would say, you're not cleaning your kids off to get them ready for school, to send to Beis HaSefer.
What kids?
And she would say, at the end of school, she would say, oh, you're not waiting for them to come home. So the Mefarshim say actually that this was kind of specific in what she was telling her, because the Gemara says that Nashim B'mai Zachyan, where does the merit of women come from? How does a woman earn merit? So she has her mitzvot, but in terms of Torah, so her merit comes from waiting for her children and her husband to come home from study. That and providing opportunity for the men who have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah to study. So Penina was kind of saying, you know, you don't have any children, you don't have access to that merit of having children who you will wait for and provide the ability to learn. And Elkanah, in a couple psukim from now, is going to try to, you know, comfort and say, you know, I'm better than 10 sons like Penina has. And the Farshim says that what he was saying was, you know, you may not have merit from children, but you still have merit from my Torah study.
Well, you would think that the two of them would have been like...
Yeah, I think, you know, they were.
After comments like that.
That's also, well, that part of what they're trying to answer is, You know, come on, like, why is Chana getting upset? You know, okay, so there's an annoying, like, woman teasing her. But, like, Chana's, like, this great tzaddikah. She should be above, you know, actually being affected by this. So I think the simple answer is no. Like, you know, everyone has feelings, and everyone is affected, you know, and even somebody who's on a great level is still going to get shaken up by somebody who's teasing and saying things that aren't nice. But Varsham still tried to suggest that it was like a more, you know, specific, targeted attack at her inability to earn merit. It was a spiritual attack in a way. That's what some of Farshim learned. I'll just note. Good. Good. So we'll just finish with that idea.
She ultimately did advocate.
Right. That's right. The Gemara says. So the Gemara says that Pnina Rishem Shamayim Niskavna. Pnina, what, you know, had good intentions for the sake of heaven. She wanted to inspire Chana to daven, and she did, and she was successful in that. And that's why she was trying to make her angry in order to, you know, to get her riled up to actually do something about it, to go and daven with Kavana and pour her prayers out to Hashem. And she was successful in that. We will see, however, that Pnina still gets punished. And we'll have to understand how to reconcile that if she was doing a good thing and it seems to, you know, it was L'shem Shamayim, why does she still deserve to be punished? But we'll work on that another week. Thank you all for coming.